Hey everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives is the whole point. Each week I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Please have a seat, everybody. Thank you very much. Up here, down there, out there, all around the world. Welcome to The Late Show. I want to say hi to all my fans in Mexico City right off the top. Hi. There you go. There you go. Broadcasting live to Mexico City right now. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Folks, you know, I've done the show for 7 years now. We've had a very good time, but I try never to lose sight of the fact that having one of these shows is a profound privilege. Not just to tell jokes, ha-ha. But to inform you, the public, that is a sacred trust. And no one in late night gives you the midterm primaries in 5 states in mid-May like the team at The Late Show. This is...
Election night in 10% of America, 22.
Driving that train. The results are in, and America has upheld its proud tradition of not knowing who won. at least in one race everyone's talking about, the Republican nomination for Senate in Pennsylvania, which pits former hedge fund executive and customer asking the manager why the people at that table got their food first, David McCormick, against TV charlatan and winner of the Emmy for Outstanding Achievement in Self-Taxidermy, Dr. Mehmet Oz. Now, as of this taping, the race is a toss-up, with Dr. Oz getting 31.3% of the vote to McCormick's 31.1%. Wow, that's a nail-biter. That is stressful. And there is no better cure for stress than Dr. Oz's raspberry ketone and green coffee bean protein pancake mix. Side effects include stress. Here's the thing. It's a nail-biter, but both sides remain confident. Last night, McCormick's chief strategist tweeted, based on how many uncounted absentee ballots there are and the margin by which Dave has won them so far, that's why we are confident of victory. While an advisor to Dr. Oz pointed to uncounted ballots in Philadelphia and declared, it's a jump ball, which, I will remind you, is how they eventually decided Bush v. Gore. Okay? W was a monster in the paint. He was a monster in the paint. He took the rock to the Rehnquist. Now, Pennsylvania law requires a recount when the margin is half a percentage point or less. But one Dr. Oz supporter sees a way around that. I'm talking, of course, about former President Fraud Flintstone, a.k.a. Flabbadabbadagoo. Old Flabbadabba said somewhere on the internet that Oz should not trust outstanding mail-in ballots typing, Dr. Oz should declare victory. It makes it much harder for them to cheat with the ballots that they just happen to find. Well, I will give him this. He is an authority on cheating. Just ask all of his wives. We do. It's been a while. Just throw it out there. Throw the corn out for the chickens. We do know who the winner of the race will face in the general election. That's Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, seen here in his formal hoodie. Now, unlike over with the Republicans, the Democratic race was not even close, with Fetterman capturing 59% of the vote and possibly going on to win every county in Pennsylvania. Clearly, he's a rising star, which may be why one Biden advisor told CNN, quote, there are big similarities between John Fetterman and Joe Biden. And that could explain Biden's latest makeover. That's nice. Looks good. He should do it. He should go for it.
I don't think he should
just
go
don't
for
fight it, right? Just go right? Don't write it, right, Fouché? Just go for it. Now, Pennsylvania Republicans did decisively choose a candidate for governor. State Senator and Mr. Clean going through a rough divorce. Doug Mastriano. Mastriano is a hard-right Christian nationalist and a central figure in efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election in Pennsylvania. That victory speech must have been a little awkward. Thank you, Pennsylvania. I couldn't have done this without Dominion voting machines and the ghost of Hugo Chavez. These elections are rigged. Stop the steal. Lock me up. Lock me up. One of the big losers last night was North Carolina Representative Madison Cawthorn, seen here entering a list of his top Axe body spray scents into the congressional record. Mango Musk. Cawthorn had the ex-president's endorsement, but he still lost the Republican primary to North Carolina State Senator and hotel concierge watching you and your wife kiss. Chuck Edwards. In addition to his role in the state Senate, Edwards operates McDonald's franchises in western North Carolina. So while Cawthorn had the ex-president's support, Edwards was endorsed by the ex-president's top advisor. Now, it's kind of shocking. Here's the thing. Here is the dealio. It's kind of shocking for an incumbent MAGA-approved congressman to lose his primary. But it may have had something to do with Cawthorn angering his GOP colleagues back in March when he said this.
The sexual perversion that goes on in Washington, all of a sudden you get invited to, like, well, hey, we're going to have kind of a sexual get-together at one of our homes. You should come. And I'm like, what did you just ask me to come to? Yeah. And then you realize they're asking you to come to an orgy. Some of the people that are leading on the movement to try and remove, you know, addiction in our country. And then you watch them do, you know, a key bump of cocaine right in front of you.
Okay, that's an obvious lie. If members of Congress were on cocaine, they would get a lot more done. Okay. Woo! Woo! Okay, that's 10 bills already passed. Tell you what, bro. Let's file cloture and keep going. Just read the budget aloud while I clean the Senate chamber with a toothbrush or start a band. Anyone else crazy thirsty? Road trip. Going to the shore. That's just the tip. I don't know. But that's just the tip of what I imagine were a good number of tips, because Cawthorn has a bunch of scandals, including being accused of engaging in insider trading, charged with driving with a revoked license, and being stopped for trying to bring a gun through airport security twice. That is so stupid. Everyone knows you can't bring a gun to the airport. You have to wait till you're through security, then go to Hudson News to get a travel-size gun. But now, Cawthorn is on his way out, which is a tough break. How will you deal with this defeat, Madison?
A key bump of cocaine.
Okay. Okay, whatever gets you through the night. Now, in pandemic news, numbers certainly seem to be going up here in New York, where this week coronavirus cases reached a high alert level. Now, to be fair, when you're walking around New York City, you're always on high alert. Honey, walk faster. Don't turn around. The guy behind us isn't wearing pants, and he's wearing an Elmo head. And not where he's supposed to. Oh, God! He's got a Greenpeace petition. Move! COVID is also, it's also rising out on the West Coast. Case in point, my dear friend and fellow late-night host Jimmy Kimmel has tested positive for COVID once again. We wish him a speedy recovery. But I do want to point out, getting COVID twice is kind of my thing. And if you're going to steal my bit, Jimmy, I have no choice but to steal one of yours, too. It's time for Mean Tweets. Here we go. Get better, Kimmel, because you can't get worse. Very mean. That's very mean. Very mean. It's hard to tell if Kimmel got COVID from a staff member or a family member because most of his staff are family members. Sad to hear that COVID sidelined my third favorite Jimmy after Fallon and Dean Sausage.
That's very mean.
I don't know why anyone would do this. I don't know why. Jimmy Kimmel has COVID. Who cares? I only watch his show for the roots anyway. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Secretary Antony Blinken.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight has worked in government for nearly 30 years and currently serves as our 71st Secretary of State. Please welcome Secretary Antony Blinken. Thank you for being here. I don't take this lightly. You don't get a Secretary of State on a late night show every day. Have you done many of these?
This is the first one.
This is the first one?
It is.
You're gonna love it. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit later about basically the State Department in general. I think people misunderstand its mission often and how important it is. But the first thing I want to talk to you about is that you're the most former person right now I could talk to about what's going on in the war in Ukraine. But before I ask you my questions, what would you like people to know about what the state of that conflict is right now?
Stephen, this is day 82 of what was an unprovoked, unjustified aggression by Russia against Ukraine. And I think what the world already knows is we've seen the remarkable courage, resiliency of the Ukrainian people. Overmatched.
Everyone said 3 or 4 days and it would be over. Everyone thought it would be over in 3 or 4 days.
There was a lot of expectation that that might happen, but because of their courage, because of their resistance, but also because of the assistance that we've been able to provide them with dozens of other countries, they've not only held their ground, they've been pushing the Russians back. They won the battle for Kyiv. Now, there's an intense fight going on in eastern and southern Ukraine. And the other thing is, the country's been terribly brutalized by this Russian aggression. You know, we had the town of Bucha near Kyiv. Mm-hmm. Russians moved out. When that tide receded, we saw what was left in its wake. And I'm afraid that as that happens in other parts of Ukraine, we'll see it. But the most important thing is this. 82 days in, the Ukrainians are standing up for their freedom. They're standing up for their sovereignty. They have so much of the world with them. And here's what I can tell you. What Vladimir Putin was trying to do was to take away their independence, their sovereignty. In his mind, Ukraine is not an independent country. It needs to be subsumed into Russia. That's what this is about. And what I think we can say with a lot of certainty conviction is that a sovereign, independent Ukraine is going to be around a lot longer than Vladimir Putin's on the scene.
Now, You were one of the first people to actually brief Zelensky before the war ever started about the likelihood of this invasion. You were first to warn the public on behalf of the administration of what might be going over there. You're now leading the U.S. efforts to have a joint response from NATO countries and set the tone for the entire world. All of that seems like the right thing to do. One thing that worries me, however right I think the fight for the Ukrainians is that is there a chance that this could tip over to a hot war with Russia? Because certainly Putin and all of the people in his circle have said they consider this a hot war with the West, whether or not we want to call it that. So how do you make sure that that doesn't happen?
You know, Stephen, the president's been very clear about this, about what this is and what it isn't. And what it isn't is, it isn't a war with Russia. This is the United States.
Not a proxy war.
And it's not a proxy war. It's about us giving the Ukrainians the help that they need to defend themselves. to stop the aggression, to hold on to their freedom, to hold on to their sovereignty. That's what we're doing. And we're also putting pressure on Russia to try to get it to stop the aggression. We have sanctions that we've been leading with dozens of other countries that are making life pretty difficult for the Russians. You know, more than 800 companies, biggest brand names in the world, have left Russia because they don't want the reputational cost of doing business there, given this aggression. That's having a real impact.
Now, we see reports about the fall of Mariupol and the Ukrainian fighters put up a fierce resistance there. Now that that city, is that accurate, that Mariupol has fallen to the Russians?
Russians have taken Mariupol.
What does that mean to the Russian efforts now?
The fight now is, after the Russians got pushed back from Kyiv and around Kyiv and from northern Ukraine and parts of western Ukraine, this has moved all the way east and all the way south, pretty near Russia itself. And that's what they're fighting over. And again, as I said, what's so heartbreaking about this is when the world actually sees what's happened in Mariupol, which it will one day, I'm afraid the pictures that we've seen coming out of Bucha a couple of months ago are going to be nothing by comparison. So this is why I think people and the American people have been incredibly generous, because through Congress, so much support given to the Ukrainians, because I think it is touching people's hearts. They're seeing a big country aggress a small one. They're seeing one country try to change the borders of another by force. They're seeing one country try to say to another country, we're going to decide what your future is going to be, not you. And we can't have a world that works that way.
And there's a bipartisan response, which is
this has been remarkable.
It's unusual these days.
Well,
anything that anyone can agree on.
It's been remarkable.
Part of Putin's motivation for the war, as I see in the reporting, that part of Putin's motivation for the war is to weaken NATO. Now, this week is Monday, and then Tuesday, Finland, and then Sweden signed the applications.
That's right.
Is Putin himself the greatest advertisement for NATO in a generation?
If I was going to have a poster for NATO, what's remarkable is when you look at this, Stephen, President Putin has managed to precipitate everything he sought to prevent. He wanted to prevent NATO from getting bigger with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Now it actually is with Finland and with Sweden. He wanted to divide the West, divide the alliance. It's more united than it's ever been. And as I said, he wanted to subjugate Ukraine, make it part of Russia. That is not going to happen. So everything we're seeing is Putin achieving the exact opposite of what he says he wants.
Now, my buddy, Pope Francis, has said that NATO takes some blame for this by basically stressing out Russia by expanding east up against Russia's borders. Do you think he's got a case?
So NATO...
He's the Pope.
And I have great reverence for him. Now, he told me that you were very close when I saw him.
Thank you.
Great reverence for him, but let me say this. NATO is a defensive alliance, countries coming together to make sure that if one of them was attacked, all the others would come in and defend that country. That's what it's about. It has no aggressive intent against Russia. It's never attacked Russia. It won't attack Russia. It doesn't intend to attack Russia.
I've got a crazy idea. Yeah. Invite Russia to be part of NATO.
Well,
what's he got to be worried about?
You know what? Back in the 1990s, that was actually something that people talked about.
And?
Well, Russians decided that wasn't what they wanted to do.
Okay. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I will ask the secretary about what Zelensky is like in person.
Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more, and Late Show Pod Show listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Back here with Secretary of State Antony Blinken. You've met Zelensky. After speaking to him many times, I assume, as the Secretary of State, you went over there and visited with him over in Kyiv. What's he like? He seems very impressive. as a leader from a distance, but we know he was an actor and a comedian, so he could just be acting impressive. But what's what's he like in person?
I gotta say, Stephen, he is quite literally the embodiment of the courage of the Ukrainian people, because this is a guy who, when the bombs started coming in, the missiles started flying, he could have left town. He could have gotten out of Kyiv. He didn't. He stayed. He led his people. And that's both incredible personal courage, but it's also because I think he felt that he had to represent Ukrainians. He had to stand up for the country's freedom and independence. So, you know, he's really inspired people all around the world. And I've had the occasion to, you know, meet with him half a dozen times. Before the war, when we had this information that Russia was likely to do this, mm-hmm. I had to tell him we were at the COP26, the climate meetings. And I sat with him and shared the information. Telling someone that Russia may be about to invade your country is definitely an eye-opener. But he has proven to be remarkably resilient. And, of course, he's also, I think, made a powerful fashion statement out of the green T-shirt. So yeah. When we visited, mm-hmm. I went with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go into a conflict zone with anyone, you want to go in with Lloyd Austin.
Because you can stand behind him.
Yes,
he's a huge
exactly.
man.
He's a big guy. Mm-hmm. And we went in. We had a remarkable 3 hours with President Zelensky, with his team. We went in on this train that took about 12 hours to get from the Polish border into Kyiv. And actually, Kyiv itself looks now, at least, remarkably normal. People on the streets, going to coffee shops, et cetera. Now, it doesn't stop the Russians from still firing missiles that hit Kyiv, but the city's come back to life. And
I understand that the embassy is going to reopen there.
The embassy, the flag went up today. Embassy,
the American flag.
American flag.
What does that mean? What's the significance? Well, two things. This will get us into what I want to talk to you about the State Department. Mm. What is the significance of an embassy having to be evacuated and that moment of return? What's the significance of both those events?
My first responsibility in this job as secretary is to look out for the well-being of the men and women of the State Department. I've got to have their security uppermost in mind. So when the attack was coming, we had to make a really hard decision to suspend our operations and to get folks out of harm's way. Let me tell you this. They didn't want to go, but we moved them to Poland. They took the flag that was flying over the embassy that day with them. And that is the same flag that's now flying over the embassy again in Kyiv today.
We have to take a little break. We'll be right back with Secretary Antony Blinken, everybody.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods, too, by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a superfan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world...
It's Fire Nation time, Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. We're back here with Secretary of State Antony Blinken. We're talking about a war, and we talked earlier about, like, the munitions that might go over there and the tactical and intelligence help the United States may give. But the State Department is not the Department of Defense. It's not the Department of War. Richard Holbrooke called it the Department of Peace. No. And General Mattis said, if you don't fund the State Department fully, then I need to buy more ammunition.
That's right.
What do people not understand about the mission of the State Department?
Well, you know, you've got it exactly right. Our job is to try to prevent war. If we fail at that, to try to make peace. And if we fail at that, to make sure that our diplomacy is doing everything it can, wherever necessary, not just to make life better for people around the world, but also to make life better for our own people, for the American people, because everything that we're trying to do is to try to make the world just a little bit safer, a little bit more prosperous, a little bit healthier, a little bit wiser, a little bit more tolerant, and that's going to benefit us.
What's the state of the State Department right now? If we only have a minute here, I'm just very curious. It was sort of famously reported as being sort of denuded during the previous administration, that people who were leaving were not being replaced, that the halls were empty. Is the State Department being restaffed?
Well, you know, President Biden said early on, as we started to move around the world again, America's back. And I can tell you this, the State Department's back. We have our men and women throughout the world, even as we're relentlessly focused on Ukraine and on helping the Ukrainian people. We're doing a lot of other things, too. We've gotten a truce in Ethiopia so that humanitarian assistance can get to people up in Tigray. We got a truce in Yemen after 8 years of war so that there's a chance at a lasting peace. We've helped get now more than 500 million COVID vaccine shots to people around the world on our way to 1.2 billion shots that the United States is giving away free, no strings attached, so that we can get ahead of COVID around the world. That's the work we do every day. And here's the thing, Stephen. What we know is this. If the United States is not engaged, if we're not trying to lead, then one of two things. Either someone else is, maybe it's China, and that might not go forward in a way that reflects our interests and our values. Or no one is, and that usually leaves a vacuum that's filled by bad things before it's filled by good things. So that's why it's so important that we engage, that we lead, and we're leading with diplomacy. That's what President Biden said he wanted. That's why the State Department is front and center. That's what we do. We're leading with diplomacy, we're leading for America, and we're trying to make things a little bit better around the world.
Well, thank you so much for being here. As important as that work is that you just described, I think perhaps you'll best be remembered as the lead guitarist for the band Abe Lincoln. And this is an actual photo. We did not mock this up. Tell me about your band. What do you get out of it, and where are you guys gigging next?
Stephen, I long wanted to be a musician. As a kid, as a teenager, that's what I wanted to do. And I see some real musicians over there. There was just one missing ingredient.
Yes.
Talent. But it has been a constant thread in my life. So I've been in a bunch of bands in quotation marks, Coalition of the Willing.
Sure, with Andre Shimonyi.
Yes, that's right.
Friend, yes.
Among others, Big Lunch.
Don't know that one. That's on me.
Name because we kind of make you feel the way you do after you've had a big lunch. A little bit drowsy.
Logie.
Logie.
Sure.
Exactly.
Logie Dance Band. Yeah.
And what we found, at least what I found in my experience, is that the best audience we have tends to be very young children who haven't developed critical faculties.
In case there are any of them watching right now, as we go out, would you care? Do you guys have a guitar that the secretary might be able to use? Please, sir. Watch it, please.
The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pod Show, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount+. And for more exclusive Late Show content, Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.